Hello everyone, this is Bill Knauer and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, as well as their fabulous yearly conference, please go to pnwa.org. Well, think about this. Think about this for a moment. Every day of the year is a big day for somebody somewhere. So today, somebody somewhere is getting born. Somebody somewhere falling in love for the first time, getting kissed for the first time, getting married. And somebody somewhere is also publishing a book. Well, that somewhere happens to be right here, right now, because today's guest, Allie Larkin, today is the release date for her second novel, Why Can't I Be You?, the follow-up to her breakout best-selling debut, Stay. Why can't I be you? That's a very good question. And it's left me with some questions for her, so I'd like to ask them right here, right now. Allie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm splendid. Thank you very much. So, congratulations. Number two.
Thank you. Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
I've heard that said. Was that the case for you?
I'm sorry. I totally missed what you said. It cut out for a second. So sorry.
The second book is harder than the first book. Was that the case?
Yes, that was absolutely the case for me. There was something to live up to all of a sudden, and that was really terrifying. And also, it was hard to fall in love with new characters again.
Yes, and Stay had an interesting beginning, because that started as this short story that kind of ballooned out, right? And so you were with it for a long time before it finally turned into a novel.
For a while, Stay was the longest short story, and I was in denial that it was ever going to be anything other than a short story. And then eventually, it was 80,000 words, and I had to kind of come to terms with that. But this was, I was setting out to write a book, and that was a very different experience. And having a deadline was a very different experience.
What was your deadline? Was it a year or 2 years?
6 months. I had already outlined the book, though, and I had chapters written and everything when the clock started ticking. But I did not have a lot of time to write it, which meant that I didn't really do anything else. I kind of cut myself off from the rest of the world and lived inside this book. And it was an interesting experience.
Because I'm sure when you were writing that first one, you had your day job and you were getting married and you know, life was going on, then you would fit it in. But this one, no. Now it's your life, practically.
Exactly, yeah. I did stay around everything else, and then this was my life. And it was, there's something nice about having an outside life. It was kind of coming back out into the world after spending 6 months writing was an adjustment. But I also I really loved this book because I felt like I saw all of it. I felt like I was really in it. I missed these characters really desperately, which I know sounds a little crazy.
Would you ever consider writing a sequel to one of your books? If you love the characters?
I'd like to write a sequel to Stay someday, only because I have more ideas for those characters. And I always did when I finished. And that might be a function of having started it as a short story that just kept going. You know, that chapter of my characters' lives stopped at the end of Stay, but I have more ideas outside of that. And it would be nice to revisit.
Well,
this book, I don't really know how you'd go back to it.
Right. Well, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because Why Can't I Be You? I thought it's a fascinating subject for a writer, because it deals with someone who takes on another person's identity. And to some degree, writers, well, why don't you fill our listeners in, because they can't have read it. It just came out, a little bit about the book.
It's about a woman who, her boyfriend, she thinks he's going to propose, but he actually breaks up with her when he's dropping her off at the airport. And she's, her name's Jenny Shaw, and she's so devastated and gets to this work conference that she was going to. And there's a high school reunion taking place. And when she gets in the elevator, this woman yells what she thinks is Jenny, but is actually Jesse, and runs into the elevator and hugs her. And she just kind of gives into the hug because she's had such a bad day that she really needs a hug. And then it just becomes harder and harder to explain why she hugged a stranger. And she just kind of keeps going with it because it's comforting. And then she falls in love with these friends of this woman who disappeared 13 years ago. And she knows what she's doing is wrong, but she doesn't know how to stop it. And what Jesse Morgan, the person she's pretending to be, has is kind of exactly what Jenny has been missing in her life.
Right. So it's so, very interesting setup, and I think it's a fascinating subject for a writer or for writers to think about, because so often what, especially if you're writing fiction, is you are assuming someone else's identity in a little bit of a, aren't you? Isn't that part of what you do?
Yeah.
Very much. And doesn't everybody, I think everybody fantasizes about that somehow, how much better their lives would be if only they could have X, maybe not an entirely different identity, but something that
exactly
would make.
Exactly. Yeah, I really do think so. I think we always have that thing over the horizon that would make life a little bit better or easier or shinier. And it's interesting because a lot of times when you get to that point, it isn't what you thought it was. But I don't necessarily think it's unhealthy. I mean, it's unhealthy to pretend to be someone else, obviously, but I don't think it's unhealthy to want things.
Want to have, like, goals, for instance, or to want to get married or something.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a hard time after I finished Stay and it was published, because it had been my goal for a very long time, and succeeding in it was like, okay, now what? You know, it was hard to find the next thing to want.
Right, because, you know, it always reminds me, plans remind me in a way of writing a book, in that you set your you aim your arrow for something and you start heading towards it. But just like a book, usually what you're aiming at is often not what you end up hitting and not where you end up. And isn't that way in our life too? We think I'm going to go to, like, you went to college for theater. Well, that's not where you ended up, but you did end up being creative and creating.
Yes.
Characters.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting because I actually use my theater education so much in writing. I learned so much about character development and, you know, and storytelling and just character details and to be able to kind of inhabit somebody else's brain. I learned so much about that as a theater major, but I dropped out of school after 2 years because I knew theater wasn't the right thing. And that was kind of devastating to recognize that that wasn't what I wanted. But I kind of got what I needed anyway, which is sort of like a Rolling Stone song, but interesting how that works out.
It is interesting how it works out. And I think that it reminds me again so much of writing a book length project, because you have glimpses of what you're trying to do, but you don't really know until you're doing. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had this experience. I know I have, where I've got a scene in my mind and it's just wonderful, and then I go to put it on the page and it's either better or worse than what I imagined, because when it goes on the page, that's a separate experience from it being in your head as an idea.
It is. It's so interesting. I think that sometimes it's almost like something gets lost in the translation or added in the moment, or it's very interesting how different. I feel like sometimes I see parts of scenes, like you said, like these little glimpses of things, you know, and it's interesting how they all come together. I find that I get a little obsessive about something, like a song or watching a movie over and over and over again, and I don't understand why. I just know that I need to do it, and then in that process, something clicks for me.
Yeah. Well, you're
And I think that's what going to college was like, too. It was like, you know, I had this idea that I I liked characters and I liked studying characters, but I really didn't know what to make of that yet. So it is interesting. It does relate.
Oh, I think so. And I know I did theater for a while as a young man. And, you know, when I'm writing, it actually doesn't matter if I'm writing memoir type stuff or fictional stuff. I have to re-enter that experience and I sort of become an actor. And
yes.
Reading your work, that was the experience I got too, that you just become the character and then you're sort of almost doing improv theater at that point.
Yes. I actually, like, I've found that if I talk on the phone or I go out into the world, that is not going to be a writing day for me. Because it does take so long to get yourself into the mindset where you're actually visualizing everything the way it is and you feel like you're understanding the character. And it's too hard to slip, at least for me. It's too hard to slip in and out of that.
Oh, that's, you know, that reminds me of myself. I feel like I've got to let my consciousness sort of sink beneath the layer of my daily chatter to where,
yes.
You know, because there's all kinds of crap floating around up there that got nothing to do with writing and inhabiting that story.
Yes, yes. And I don't know if you feel like this. I always joke about it. It might be a little bit gross, but you know when you see those superhero movies where somebody has a power and they're concentrating really hard and their nose starts to bleed?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I always feel after I've been writing all day, is that I'm like waiting for my nose to bleed because I've used all my superpowers.
Well, but you know, I'll tell you though, it was that's an interesting point that you bring up. And one of the, excuse me, one of the sort of lectures I will give when I give lectures is about the myth that writing is hard. And one of my beliefs is the reason we call it hard is because writing requires our full attention. You can't,
yeah. You
can't be worrying about the past. You can't be doing your taxes in your head or having an argument with your husband. It requires your full attention. And I think that human beings don't generally give life their full attention the moment that they're in. But that's what writing requires. You can't do it otherwise.
No, you can't. You can't. And you suffer for it if you try. And, you know, you can. There are a lot of days when I should be writing and I just call it quits because I know that there's really no point in sitting in front of the computer if I can't focus.
Right.
But when I follow those moments when you're just in it and you can focus, it isn't hard. It's exhausting, but it's not hard. It's
right,
such a joy.
Different.
That is my favorite part. Yeah.
I wouldn't give it up for anything because
I couldn't,
life is always easiest when you're able to give it your full attention. It's not, there's a lot of reasons we don't, but when you do, I always feel like a single moment's potential opens up that you couldn't have seen otherwise.
Yeah.
Wherever that is. So, Allie, you say you are a... Now, wait a minute. See, I just don't know about this. You say that you outlined Why Can't I Be You? I heard you say. But you see, excuse me, listening to your voice, I would not guess that you are an outliner. Did you outline Stay?
I did not outline Stay. I probably wrote Stay about 7 times over in terms of what actually stayed in the book. Like, I probably deleted about 7 times over. And I thought that I would hate outlining. I really kind of railed against it, like, thought that it would kill my creative process in some way. The story did change a little. There were still a lot of discoveries along the way, but outlining really helped me focus on the characters even more because I knew that some things needed to happen in this story because it was such a complicated premise and I needed to kind of keep track of all the details around it. And I kind of found that I like outlining now. I do it in a way so that there are still discoveries.
Right.
And I'm weird about it, you know, because I do put just those little glimpses. Sometimes my outlines are very detailed and sometimes it's like just a feeling, you know, in this section over, you know. And then as those, you know, we talked about those little glimpses, as those little glimpses come up, I have a place to put them. Found that really helpful.
All right, so I'm wrong sometimes. I guess I was partly right. I heard your outlining the beginning.
Yeah. Then I don't write the book in order either.
Oh, you're one of those.
I
you people
am.
Do it. Okay, so you write it however, whatever you want to write that day is what you write that day.
Yeah. And I mean, eventually at the end, you kind of have to fill in the rest of it. And some of it, you know, I do try to keep going in a certain direction, but actually with Why Can't I Be You, I was so stuck that I quit writing one weekend. I was like, you know, my husband was probably rolling his eyes, but I'm like, that's it. I can't do this. I'm done. I'm going to call my agent on Monday. I can't do this. The story doesn't work. Yeah. And then, and that was like on Saturday, I just totally quit writing in general. And then on Sunday, I was sitting there and had this idea for this scene with Robbie, who's one of the characters, and Jenny. And I feel like Robbie made me fall in love with this book. Something happened. It was this little spark. It was four or five chapters ahead of where I was with the book. And everything fell into place because I saw him so clearly and loved him so much. And I feel like he kind of led me through this book, even though he's a secondary character. He's not my main character.
But he got you back into it.
There was so much joy in him. He did. And now, I mean, I would have been so stupid to stop writing this book. It would have haunted me forever. And I'm not a quitter. And I couldn't quit writing if I wanted to. So.
But that moment is brutal. And I'll tell you, I think every writer has it with every single book in some shape or form or another. Well, you think, that's it. I'm done. Not just with this book, but with all of it. I'm just done. Clearly, I've reached the bottom of the well.
Yeah. Exactly. It was all a fluke up until this point, and
I
actually read
brutal.
It is brutal. There was that book Imagine How Creativity Counts or something along those lines that came out a little while ago.
Yeah.
And he actually talked about how quitting is a part of the creative process.
Oh. Interesting, there's a great story Andre Dubuis tells about E.L. Doctorow, that when he wrote Ragtime, he started it because he quit writing another novel. And it was just dead in the water, and he realized it was dead. And he said, well, I won't leave until I write a scene. And he ended up writing this scene about a guy in a jazz age top hat walking along with a cane, and that became the beginning of Ragtime.
Oh, wow.
Born out of the death of another book.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah, but like that.
But I feel like you have to, you know, this. You do, I mean, in the creative process, you always reach these moments where you don't know where to turn next. You just don't know yet. You have to confess that to yourself instead of pretending that you do know if you don't.
Yeah, you have to. Because if you pretend you do know and you force things, you're just going to get stuck later on. You can't.
So, I think so.
I think so
because I think it's. Some people say they write their way through it. I've never subscribed to that myself. I would rather not write when I know I've got nothing than try and force myself to. It sounds like you do the same.
I'm with you on that. I can't be a write every day person. I'm a binge writer. I won't write for a while and then I won't stop writing.
When you're not writing, is it sort of gestating in you? Can you feel it kind of percolating around?
Yes. And I almost like curate my life experiences. I kind of have this intuition about the things that I need to do. What I'm trying to do is get over the guilt for that, because sometimes I really do just need to sit and watch movies for 2 days or talk to my sister-in-law on the phone for a really long time about, you know, nothing that seems directly related, and I feel like I'm slacking off. But I do seem to have an intuition about the things that I need to consume to have any sort of output in terms of my creativity. So,
it reminds me of a great story I heard a guy named Michael Neal tell, and he works with some very successful clients. He's like a life coach, and he knows this investment firm that is incredibly successful. I mean, billion-dollar whatever investment firm. But they have a very relaxed approach to work, which is unusual for investment firms, which are very, you know, work, work, work. And they say, if you come into work and you're feeling bad and you've got nothing going on, go home, because you're no good to us here. So go home and get happy. And if you come back tomorrow and you're miserable, go home again. We want you to come into
Yeah.
work, and we want you to feel good. And they people can't believe it, but it works, and they tracked all. And so there's something about allowing it to happen in the way it's supposed to, because you're not
Yeah.
me, and you're not anybody else. You've got to let it happen the way it's sort of meant to.
It does, and it's hard to trust in that. It's really hard
Yeah.
to, on your ego, to know, and even knowing that, like, I had a couple weeks where I really was not, you know, I was only getting little bits done here and there, and then I had a weekend where I think I wrote close to 12,000 words in 2 days. I mean, I don't remember that weekend almost, you know, like, I hope I ate, you know, it was just amazing because I couldn't stop writing. I was ready to do it, and nothing I could have done ahead of time would have done anything. You know, there was nothing I could have done to get myself to write that a couple thousand words a day, which
See.
Just wouldn't have worked.
I love that story. Everybody's got their own way of doing things, but this is why I really liken writing much more to being a gardener than an architect, in that you really are creating an environment where you can let the story bloom. And to some degree, you're not in charge of the flower. You know, the gardener can allow the flower to grow, but can't make the flower. And the same sort of is true, I think, of writers. You allow the story to come, and then you hopefully allow, you know, translate it as quickly and as accurately as you can, but you're not as in charge as someone who goes to the same job every single day and clunk, clunk, clunk and does it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. You know, I almost said I wish that it did, but I don't. I like the magic of it. It's so
yeah.
great to have those moments where you just get it all of a sudden, you know, something, or even just those moments where you can't put it into words yet, but there are thoughts gelling, you know,
that takes
happening.
Courage, because it's you're depending on this thing, your imagination, which is sort of
yeah.
you, but not you, to provide your bread and butter, you know, or a portion of it, to provide all the things that the guy who goes to the job every single day gets from it. But it's so
yeah.
ephemeral. In a way, so not there and yet there.
Yes, yes. And that's actually why I really liked having an outline, and why I will continue to do it, is that I at least had the basic structure, so I was directing my mind in the right place. It's like I had the flower beds.
Yes. You had a sense of structure. You had a sense of some kind of order to this madness.
Exactly. And that really helped, because then I could say, oh, okay, I'm going to think about this flower bed. I'll plant some seeds here and see what happens. And maybe I'll plant some seeds over here too and see if anything happens there. And I liked that. And
yeah.
even though I mean, and I'm surprised by that, because I am kind of a fly by the seat of my pants person. I think life is more interesting that way. But I
have
an outline
right
now.
That's amazing. Well,
yeah.
you know, so let me ask you this. I don't often do this on this show, but I'm very curious with you. I'd like you to finish a sentence for me, okay?
And
this is the sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
It has taught me to value my mind.
Value your mind. How has it taught you that? And why
did
it before?
I grew up with undiagnosed attention deficit disorder. And so I was kind of like the square peg in the round hole for a really long time. And now that is my talent, and I love that.
That's fantastic. Do you know, I interviewed Henry Winkler, who had dyslexia his whole life. Yeah, and as he wrote, he was writing these children's books about a kid with dyslexia, very much like himself. And he said that he always assumed he was stupid up until the age of 60 when he wrote his first book. He just said, I'm getting by, but I'm stupid, and someday they'll figure it out. And it was right on him that he wasn't.
Can't even imagine, because I felt that way until I was 18. I felt like when I had a success, it was an oops, you know, it was a fluke. And otherwise, I didn't really think that I had that much going on. And it was actually kind of a struggle to find out otherwise, too. And I feel like I'm in this really good place in my life right now because all that time I spent daydreaming is now, that's now my superpower, you know, that is.
That's right. You were preparing yourself. You were preparing yourself for your actual job.
Yes, I was. I was. And that's such a great, it's such a great thing.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to be like, oh, now it all makes sense. Like now I make sense. And I love that. And that's why it is. And I wish I could go back and tell myself, you know, if I could go back in time and say, hey, it'll be okay. But I don't think it works that way. I think that everything I went through, and all the doubt that I had made me a person who was more observant and, you know, someone who was looking at the world in a different way. And
absolutely.
I'm thankful for that. I, you know, it would have been nice not to struggle, but the struggles taught me something.
Well, and would you ever read a book about a character who didn't struggle?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Would you ever write a book about a character?
We're not that interesting if we don't struggle. Yeah, I can't see that happening.
It's absolutely pointless. And, you know, I had a similar experience where I was the first time I ever gave a lecture, I'd always wanted to do it, but I'd planned the whole thing out. And then in the middle of it, I started telling this story to these people. And it was a story I've been telling all my life at one point or another, because I always tell people stories. And I realized I was telling it the same way and I'd always told the stories, whether it was at my kitchen table or, you know, at work or wherever. And it was going very well. And I had this audience all listening. And I thought, oh, my God, this is all – I'm doing all I've ever done. I'm just building stories. This is like successful or whatever, but this is just me telling stories. I've spent my whole life doing that. And life will prepare you for what you needed to really do.
Yeah. It's amazing when you kind of come into your own. It's a really great feeling.
Yeah, it is. And you don't have to try so hard anymore.
Yeah. There was actually a song that inspired Why Can't I Be You, which is, I mean, the Cure song, obviously, but there's a Chris Pirica song called Wrecking Ball, and there's a line in it that talks about the lights going out and learning to see in the dark.
Oh.
And that was one of the things that I became so obsessed with when I was writing this book. It's a beautiful song, but just this idea. I have one of my characters actually says, what doesn't kill you gives you superpowers. Like this whole fascination of the idea that, you know, okay, the lights go out and then you learn how to see in the dark, you know, that something bad happens and then you figure it out, you know, and you gain something from it. And I love that.
And that
really influenced the book.
Well, that's great. And I think that that's the way all our stories get told in a way. And I think that life is always saying to you, you are not as weak as you think. You are not as not weak at all, period. But if you don't believe it, I'm going to teach you. And until you learn it, because it, I think life, however you define that, absolutely wants you to see yourself as complete and as perfect as you already are. And so it will find any means necessary to guide you. And isn't that, as a writer, kind of what you're doing with your characters? Aren't you trying to show about
them? Yeah, you're trying to, and that's like with this character, I really focused on the fact that the things that she had been through made her a person that could pretend to be someone else, and that was a talent. She just needed to harness it correctly.
That's right. Well, Allie, listen, best of luck with Why Can't I.
Thank you.
I hope it's just a smash success, and it was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much. It was so great to talk with you, Bill.
Oh, you're welcome. And to the rest of you, life's just preparing you. That's all it's doing. Preparing you to be the hero of your own story. You already are, of course, whether you know it or not. So write what you love, do what you love, follow what you love, and life will just take care of the rest. Next week, I can't even remember who I got on the show next week, so I can't even tell you, but I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun. Until then, have a lot of fun, and I'll see you soon. Take care, everyone.